cat is making me nervous. Everybody, welcome to a new episode of the Bleeding Metal Podcast. That was my cat, but I am Kiki, your host. My pronouns are she, her, and I am always joined by my co-host,
Pia, she, her, hello.
And today we are bringing you a new topic, music geography. I have always wondered why certain genres are more represented by a certain country, or why are specific places more nurturing for a specific genre of music? So today we are going to talk a little bit about that, and we can start by talking about the documentary that we just watched. It is called This Is Pop on Netflix. And you might wonder, why are we discussing pop in a metal podcast? Well.
But the funny thing is that Sam Dunn from Banger Productions, I think is the name of his company, is also involved in this documentary. And he is well known for the Metal Headbanger's Journey and the Global Metal documentary. So there is already a connection to heavy metal.
Oh, there are many connections, but I would also say from a musicologist's perspective, metal and pop are intertwined already in the sense of both not being classical music. Of course, they are both influenced by classical music, but the intellectuals would tell you that, the differences are that classical music is more serious, theoretical music, and popular music is the rest. So yeah, that's what the academics would say, and we don't necessarily agree. But within this category of popular music, I would say for all of the different genres and subgenres of commercial music in general, and by commercial music, you might also say, well, metalheads do music for art and not for selling. Well, that's not always the case.
It's partly true.
Yeah, and it's also a completely different discussion. But from its origins in the 50s, you know, I like to see my music history in terms of at some point the Beatles and the Rolling Stones separated what we now know as pop and rock, and from those, metal was also born. And that is why the theory and the songwriting are also kind of similar. And that is why we are also discussing that today. And I would like to ask you, Pia, to maybe recap the documentary a little bit so that we can talk about it and start from there. And while the documentary centers on Sweden, and why Sweden is such a nurturing ground, a nurturing soil for pop music, I would also like to have in the background of our minds the question that we also ask ourselves often, why is Finland such a nurturing ground for heavy metal? And yeah, there must be something in the north.
Probably, yes. First of all, I just started thinking about the topic right yesterday when we agreed on speaking about this. So I might be guessing a lot of things. I don't have big knowledge about it. So I'm very happy, Kiki, that you even studied studied the subject we talk about today, or a subject that is very close to what we talk about today.
Disclaimer though, we haven't really researched this.
Yes.
This is a very spontaneous opinion and perspective based episode. I would love to have experts like sociologists and geopolitical scientists come and help us understand all of this. But it's just a weird brainstorming and opinion based. These are not facts.
Yes. Yeah. That was also something that crossed my mind, that you could do a whole podcast about what we talk about today, and we could find topics for future episodes as well, where we need to do more research. And when Steffi and I were at Tuska Festival 2017, we met someone who did research on music, I think also from Finland. And we had an interview with him that you can also hear in our podcast episode from back then. So maybe we can find answers by re-listening to that one, to a few of our questions. And before I start with the documentary, you just mentioned Beatles and Rolling Stones. And I remember my parents told me when they were young, that was the discussion. Are you a fan of the Beatles or are you a fan of the Rolling Stones? So is it pop music for you or rock music? So
that is hilarious that you mentioned that. Just this past weekend, we are recording this on April 14th. Just this past weekend, Easter weekend, my father-in-law actually told me that exact same thing. There were these two very divided teams. Mm-hmm. You were either team Beatles or you were team Stones. And yep. There was this kind of animosity between them.
Yes.
Weird.
Back then there was no internet and you had to listen to what comes up in the radio. And so radio, I think that all of us get in touch with pop music the first time when we get in touch with music at all. So even though there is music, especially for kids, they also ride the car with their parents and there is the radio and stuff like that. So you cannot grow up without being in touch with pop music. So that's everywhere.
True.
The documentary, I only watched the third episode of the serial about This Is Pop. And as you just already said, Kiki, it focuses on Sweden, and the documentary makers ask themselves why there are so many successful producers from Sweden. Because what I didn't know before, many hits, and I'm talking about hits, number one all around the world.
Chart, Billboard hits, yeah.
Yes. They were produced by people from Sweden. And not only people from Sweden, we can focus on Stockholm here because there was the studio.
Yeah, it was called the Sharon Studio.
Yes.
Yeah. And even what we didn't say at the beginning, yeah, the episode, the documentary episode that we're talking about is the Stockholm Syndrome from mm-hmm. This Is Pop on Netflix. Yeah.
I think they are from the US or from Canada. I know that Sam Dunn is Canadian. So I think the makers of the documentary come from there, and they traveled to Stockholm to talk with the people from the studio. They were not able to speak with the founder of the studio because he died from cancer many, many years ago. But it was also interesting to hear the opinions and the memories from the other people who worked with him and who also became very famous, very successful producers, or maybe not famous, because that's also something they said in the documentary, that Swedish people don't talk about their own success. They prefer mm-hmm. when other people do that. And there is also a specific word that was very hard to translate, but that actually means that you don't talk about your own what you achieved and stuff like that.
Yeah, apparently there's this unspoken cultural law in Sweden mm-hmm. that prohibits you of bragging about your success.
Yeah.
Which I thought was very interesting and very cool.
And that also explains why they have successful producers, because producers are always in the background. So some musicians say, and also do their promo and stuff with talking about their producer and the studio they recorded and everything. But honestly, I think that that is not so important for the people out there. It's interesting for us journalists, but if I wouldn't be into music journalism, I think I wouldn't really pay attention to that. But that was also something that came up in the documentary, that one guy thought, okay, I like these songs and they are all produced by the same person, or one person was always involved, so I need to talk with him. And he also came from Sweden and was the apprentice of the apprentice of the famous guy. Dennis yeah. Pop is his artist name, I think, who was the starting point for all of this.
That is also something that I found really cool, because it's apparently a cultural thing as well, that not only you don't brag about your success, you also share it. You share your knowledge. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That is incredible. It's not like, oh, this is my industry secret, my precious, and I will take it to my grave. No, they had somebody, they always allowed people to hang around and learn from them, from what they were doing. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really cool as well, yeah.
Yes. I can imagine that this happens more often in studios around the world, but you also need to find the right people you actually want to hang out with for the rest of your life or the rest of your business sure. life, probably. Of course, the documentary started with ABBA, because that's the most famous, the export product yeah. music-wise mm-hmm. from Sweden. They also said that was the first band from Sweden in the Eurovision Song Contest who sang in English, also because it was the first time that the bands were allowed to use another language than their mother tongue. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of the same, that the people in Sweden were not so convinced about the quality of ABBA. That reminded me a bit of the Scorpions in Germany.
Oh, really?
Because Scorpions, or also Modern Talking. In Germany, people are like, okay, Modern Talking, Scorpions. But they are both very famous all around the world. Yeah. So, yeah, that's also something where we kind of deny the quality of these bands, of these groups. And that also happened to ABBA.
Yeah, they weren't taken seriously in mm-hmm. Sweden. Nobody would like say they like them. Mm-hmm. It was like frowned upon to say I like ABBA as a Swede, yes. apparently. Yeah.
Until an American musician came and said he likes them, and he does a cover version.
Elvis Costello, yeah.
Yeah. So that was also really interesting. And of course, they tried to find out about the secret, why the songs from there are so popular. For example, Hit Me Baby One More Time was recorded actually in this studio in Stockholm, mm-hmm. and also Backstreet Boys hits, yeah, so many. And there is a melancholy in all of these songs. So there was a piano player who just played some of the melodies, and when you only hear the melody on the piano, some of them were really, really sad. And they are there. They are underlining in these songs. Plus, they just take a lot of hooks and put them in a row, so to speak. So that's another secret. And the reason for this melancholy, they said, well, that the country is very dark, so you have only a few hours of sun, or maybe no sun at all in winter. And it's cold compared to the rest of the Europe, at least. And that does something with the minds of the people. Maybe also there are not so many people when you compare Hamburg. How many people live in Hamburg to how many people live in Sweden? I think it's more or less the same.
Right. Yes. Another thing that was interesting to point out, that they pointed out, was that all these hits were very Schlager inspired.
Yes.
And
they even showed German Schlager.
Yeah.
In the documentary. And I was like, I was just talking about this in the As Everything Unfolds bonus episode, that Felt Like Home has this Schlager keyboard.
All right, every musician out there, if you want to make kids listen to Schlager.
To German Ballermann hits.
Torture yourself. Come to Germany and go to a Schlager club.
We come with you if you are afraid of going alone.
Do it at your own risk, please. Schlager is this very, very popular, very dancey, very weirdly, I don't even know how to describe it. It's,
you can sing along with it.
Yeah, it's very, very catchy. Easily. It's very easy listening. Yeah, lots of good hooks that get actually stuck in your head for months. And
easy lyrics.
Yeah, that's where I was going. I don't know if they are easy or just stupid.
Stupid and full of sexism.
Yes, brain empty, full of sexism.
Different topic.
And alcohol.
Let's not go there.
Yeah, we don't want to go there. But yeah, apparently that is what inspired ABBA, and that is what inspired the songwriting that then led to the super hits of the 90s, like Britney's and the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC, I think, was also there. Celine Dion was also there. So many. And that, I mean, of course, music keeps evolving, and so did all these musicians. And the person that you mentioned a few minutes ago, the apprentice of the apprentice of the main producer, was Shellback.
Yeah.
And he is a pop songwriter and producer, also a vocalist of the metal band Blinded Colony. Nowadays, they are called The Blinded. I don't know if whether he's still a member or not, but back then, apparently he went on tour with Blinded Colony and had a concert in Vienna, and while warming up or something, came up with a riff that later became Pink's
So What.
So What? Yeah, and that is a song, not my favorite of Pink's, but it's actually a song that is also very catchy and very stuck in your head. And I would have never guessed, it actually blew my mind to think that it started as kind of a rock or metal riff and went on to be this huge pop hit. So that was super interesting. And then we have another, another metal connection.
Yes. Now that you mentioned Pink, what I also thought while watching the documentary, because many of the songs of these superstars were actually written by other people, and they hardly put something in there by their own. So Pink wrote the lyrics, and there was also a female producer who said, for me, it's important that they're that the people feel comfortable here, and also the woman, because I had the situation that I was the only woman in a room and I had to do the song. And she said that she always involves the artists in the writing process and everything. But in the end, so many parts of the success, that's also what one of the Backstreet Boys said, is based on other people, because they wrote the song, for example. But all these pop stars, they do a lot for their success.
Yeah.
So they also said that about Britney Spears, that she was always there, that she sang the song again and again and again, and so many times how they needed it. And also when you see their stage shows and everything, they are not only able to sing, they also entertain a lot. They have to...
They are performers.
A lot of charisma and stuff like that. So I don't want to say, or I don't want to let the impression come up that pop stars are, I don't know, they are not talented or whatever.
Yeah.
You basically need to give up a lot to be a pop star.
Oh, yeah.
And focus everything on your career.
Yeah, I think that is kind of a prejudice as well. Big pop stars don't write their own songs, and so they're less skilled musicians. than musicians in other genres. And I think that you're right. It's more about the collaboration. Mm-hmm. It's about somebody having a really cool song and maybe not being able to sing it and perform it, maybe not wanting to sing it and perform it, maybe wanting another person to be the interpreter of that specific song. I also think that as an audience, we connect with the voice, we connect with the image. That is what's important.
Mm-hmm.
The important thing as an audience to me is what this song makes me feel.
Yes.
And whether I can connect with it and like it that way, right? And yeah, performers are skilled and talented in their own right and do a lot of work to be this image, to do all of the press and PR and touring and performing and all of that. In the case of Britney Spears, for example, she's an amazing dancer as well. So yeah, I think that is a myth that should be busted, that pop stars aren't as good musicians. And yeah, I think it's something to appreciate, that the work mm-hmm. as a team is what brings out the best finished product, maybe the mm-hmm. best results.
Yeah. What we didn't mention while we were talking about the episode of This Is Pop, the producers, or at least Dennis Pop, started as a DJ.
Right.
And what he did is that he was testing his music in a live environment. So when he was writing his music, was looking if the people were dancing or if they stopped dancing at a specific point. And
mm-hmm.
then he changed parts. And then, yeah. And his teammate, he was driving around with his car and also listened to the music. And then they had a song in the end that was working on the dance floors, but also was working mm-hmm. when you were alone.
That is really important. I mean, especially if you want it to be like that. If you want people to be able to party to your song, making it with the people who are going to party and seeing their reaction can be really good feedback. Yes. I don't know if I talked about this in the previous episodes. I recently went to a jazz mm-hmm. concert kind of thing. And, I think it's almost 2 months ago already. They are actually writing an album with the audience in these mm-hmm. in these concerts. It's a concert series. So it's more of a live songwriting session type of thing. And they will just, you know, perform the stuff that they have so far and actually get input and ideas from the audience and from each other and just try things out, but live, and see how they work and see what people like better. And so at some point they played two different parts and like let the audience clap for one or the other to decide on which should they keep working on.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was really interesting, like to involve your audience into the working process of a song or an album can be really nice, to not only let your fans have a little bit of insight in what you're working on, but also make them connect from the beginning, make mm-hmm. them make them feel like they contributed something, even if it's just an "I like it." Right? Yep. And that makes a bond. And this is now from a marketing perspective. That connects your audience to your product with this feeling of loyalty
mm-hmm.
so that when it's actually out on the market, they will surely check it out.
Yes.
Because they just want to know what came out of that little thing that little grain of sand that I contributed.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of musicians doing that on Twitch as well. Doing, mm-hmm. producing, songwriting, maybe just even rehearsing, and let the chat pitch in to what they're doing. That's some advice for bands out there. It's something really cool to do. Should we go over to reflecting on why, and also the parallel to, I think Finland is to metal what Sweden is to pop?
Yes.
Could be?
Maybe, but when I was in school, I was already a big fan of couple of bands from Finland, and we were told to speak about one country from the from Europe, and I said, oh, I want to talk about Finland. And I also talked about the music there, and I was back then surprised that the charts were not crowded with metal bands, but there were also a lot of pop acts and bands like You and Me, Baby A, what was the name again?
Bloodhound Gang?
Yes.
They're Finnish? No.
Yes.
That's amazing.
So maybe it's just our prejudice that Finland is full of metal, because yeah, there are of course also other people who listen to different music, also hip hop and so on.
There's Finnish rap. Did you know that? I mean, of course, but right. Wow.
There's also French metal, but that's another story. and yeah, but there are of course more metal bands in the charts, and they are more famous. And also the people in the documentary, they had long hair, and obviously they were also into rock music, or they at least adapted the style, or the style is more common for guys to have long hair and stuff like that. So I would agree that metal is very big in Finland, but maybe we shouldn't expect that it is the music from this country.
No, of course, of course. I mean, that's what happens when we generalize something, right? It's also what I always say. I come from Ecuador, and there are also metal bands there. It's not all salsa and reggaeton. You know?
Talking about Sweden, we have this Gothenburg style with In Flames.
Right.
For example, yeah.
Right. And that is another thing about the geography of metal specifically that also I have always wondered about. Why or where is the geographical and historical explanation or story that explains that gothic metal was so big in Germany, that the other specific subgenres of metal are big in specific parts of the planet?
Yeah.
That is something that has interested me always.
Maybe the roots are in the before internet time. That somebody just started with the music, because before we had the internet and the streaming platform, it was not so easy to listen to music that was not in the radio or in TV later, MTV. And also in the beginning of the internet, it was not so easy to listen to the music, because you had to download that with very slow capacity. So even when I started being in the internet, sending a picture was pretty hard, because it was so slow. Everything had low capacity, and that was horrible. So that also was the case for music. And when you list, or when you are a fan of a style, in this case metal, you of course go to the concerts that are near you with local bands. And I think the scenes were more local, or much more local than they are nowadays. And so
bands influenced each other, you mean?
Yes. And when one band started playing black metal, for example, and did that in a very good way, very catchy, and maybe also became famous in the other countries, then they were obviously before that well known in their own country, and other bands were influenced by that. That's my theory.
Yeah, there is that thing of, okay, I heard this, I liked it, and I'm going to get inspired from that and to make something new.
Also, when you wanted to play live yourself, you needed to find a place where your music fits. And if there are only death metal concerts in your town, when you want to go on stage, you can't come up with gothic metal. That just wouldn't work.
Right. Right, that's a good point.
I think that's different now, so it'll be interesting to see where we are in 20 years if this...
Which is why metalcore comes from all over the planet now.
What? Yeah. If the stereotypes are still near the facts, or if they go away from being true.
Right. The other thing that I was thinking as well is, when, I mean, in the documentary, in the This Is Pop documentary, the question was also why specifically Sweden? Why did all of this super good songwriting start here and get spread out all over the world? And there was some of what you said already about the melancholy, the coldness, the
loneliness,
the je ne sais quoi of the north, which might apply to metal as well. But what the artists in the, or yeah, the artists, the producers in the documentary answered was because we work hard and we don't like to brag about our success. And the part about not bragging about the success, I think, is actually a good thing. There's some value to that. I think specifically for women, it might reinforce the imposter syndrome that we already have to deal with, of, you know, society not having valued us for centuries. And so now we have to prove ourselves by working three times as hard sometimes, mm-hmm, and stuff like that. And then we will still get nervous and don't think that we are the experts that we actually are. So there's that double-edged sword there in my eyes. I don't think bragging is a good thing. Being arrogant and thinking that you are better than someone else is not a good thing, for sure. But recognizing your own value and offering that help to others and empowering others through your knowledge, or, you know, just humbly telling people what you have done, and, you know, in the context of that might bring you new opportunities, I think all of that is fine. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that actually made me a little angry, I think it was actually the one woman producer that they had in the documentary. And she, mm-hmm, she really answered, and it was this, because we work hard. Honey, we work hard all over the fucking world. Mm-hmm. But we don't always have the same opportunities all over the world.
Yes.
You cannot say that hard work is the only thing you need when you have a disparity in education, in opportunities, in so many different geopolitical things all over the world. Mm-hmm. Of course, there is a very cool education infrastructure in Sweden. And Europe puts a lot of value in musical education from very early childhood. Mm-hmm. And so I think those are also factors that we need to take into account when we are talking about why something happens in a specific part of the world.
I think they even said in the beginning of the documentary that Sweden was a socialist country. Mm-hmm. And
in the 70s.
In the 70s, yeah. And I would say that, of course, people are not equal, even not in socialism. But mm-hmm, there is a specific base that is available for more people. So the access to knowledge, mm-hmm, for everyone is easier, mm-hmm, in socialist countries, or easier than in capitalistic countries.
Yeah. To knowledge, to gear, to tools, instruments.
Yeah. So that also underlines what you just said, that for them it for sure was easier to get access to specific stuff that they needed to be successful later.
Yeah, exactly. There's this thing about skill and talent and also priorities. When you have a, mm-hmm, when you have a healthcare system and a school system that works and has your back.
Yeah.
Then you don't need to worry so much about not getting sick, mm-hmm, and when paying your bills is easier, and you know that if you get sick you won't have to spend your savings.
Yeah.
Then you, of course, you also have the freedom of mind and spirit to say, "Hell yeah, I'm gonna study music."
Mm-hmm. That's also a myth that is told women a lot, that you can have it all. You can have mm-hmm. a career, you can have kids, you can have, I don't know, mm-hmm. Focus on your hobbies and be a gamer and whatever. Yes, that's true, but you can only have one of these. And that's the difference for men. Men can have kids and career, for example. And for women, that is way harder. Mm-hmm. So
it's not impossible. Sure, you can have it all, but...
But the expectations are different. The mental load is different. And we should not forget that. And even though when we say, yes, the opportunities are there, and I'm thankful for what women in other generations fought for and also achieved. Mm-hmm. But it's not like we can have it all. We have to focus on one thing.
Or you can be it all. I think that is mm-hmm. something that our generation at least was told a lot. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Gen Z has to deal with that as much. But I think we really got fed it a lot of this. You can be whatever you want. You can mm-hmm. imagine whatever you want and you can be whatever you want. Right? But if you want to be an astronaut and barely have access to basic education, that's uh-huh. going to be a lot harder than if you are a middle-class white person in the social northern hemisphere.
Just yesterday, I heard the news that a black person and a woman go to Jupiter or whatever. They're involved in an interstellar project, and they are the first black person and the first woman. And I was like, wow, we came so far. Maybe
not. Wait, what year is it?
Let's celebrate that. I'm just sad that it happens now and not 30 years earlier. It should be a normal thing by now.
Sure, yeah. And I mean, that of course is worth celebrating. But yeah, with that awareness and consciousness that the progress we're making is not going as fast as we maybe should.
Or as people all around the world want to tell us or want us to believe.
Right. That is right. And of course, that is also, we are also saying that in a current world time situation where there is not only, you know, war and devastation all over the planet, there is also human rights violations mm-hmm. all over the planet.
In countries like the USA, where we never expected that.
Yeah, all of the laws and progress that were actually achieved are rolling back. And I think that's something you don't necessarily expect. Mm-hmm. You think, hey, we're making this happen and we now have these rights. And finally, and you don't expect necessarily that politicians and governments can actually change and roll back on all of that.
Yes, and that is really scary.
So yeah, those are myths that in 2023 we still have to debunk a little bit. When somebody tells you you can be anything you want, you can have it all, that is a perspective of privilege, and you should really ask them how. Mm-hmm. and work out your own situation with your own expectations and priorities and hell yeah, always with the optimism and hopes, but with less pressure and expectations.
Yes, the whole system has to change.
Yeah, that is a very... We came far, far away. We started asking ourselves, why does music come from specific places? And we have arrived at the geopolitical answer of, well, because some places...
Are more privileged than others.
Are more privileged than others. Shit. I mean, on the other side, of course, there is amazing music from Latin America, for example, and from Africa, and not even just the more native that you could also call world music, but also, let's say, tango, let's say, yeah, what I also just mentioned, you know, salsa and reggaeton. Reggaeton is on top of the freaking world right now as well. Those, I don't really know the music history of those genres, so I can't really draw parallels there. But yeah, of course, it's not just, you know, good music or good hits come from these specific places, not at all. Mm. But these specific genres that we are interested in and that are also so successful have come from these specific places we talked about today.
Mm. Maybe it also has to do with the topics that metalheads are interested in. So metal, or there are some genres, some subgenres that focus on Viking stories, for example, or medieval stories.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something, or this, the Viking history is deeply rooted in the countries that are in the north, obviously near the ocean, near the seven seas or whatever.
Right, because of the culture as well, because of the
mythology
being so entrenched in the culture.
Mm, they bring that into the music as well, or at least some of these bands, and also how they look like is what we imagine Vikings might have looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And that counts for the northern countries, but when Sepultura came from Brazil, they had one of their most successful albums, Roots, Bloody Roots, by adding some of the music from their country to that, mm-hmm. or at least what us Europeans thought that music sounds like, because I was never there. I don't know. Maybe they just gave us what we wanted and what
your prejudices brain are. Is expecting from a stereotype. Yeah.
Yes. But bringing that into the music as well. And I know that also from, for example, Windrunner from Vietnam, mm-hmm. I think I hear some of their own cultural music from their country in their metal music as well. And that's something that I like a lot. But there is a lot of romance when thinking about that we expect these topics of Vikings and medieval, I don't know, wars and whatever in mm-hmm. in the topics or also in the image, and that feels more natural when you see white men
with red beards.
Red beards. So the image fits perfectly with the,
yes.
Yes, the style and everything. Does it make sense?
It does. It totally makes sense. And that it also makes sense that music is influenced by history and by current times, right? That is why we have punk always rebellious, wanting to change, always socially critical, wanting change and revolution. And there's the same in Latin America, especially in Chile and Argentina and such. And it's called música protesta, mm-hmm. like protesting music. And there's a lot nowadays, for example, as well, there's a lot of feminist music. Of course, this is something a little bit, the feminist music, I mean, is a little bit like the female fronted metal. Of course, it's not a genre, but it's a category under which a lot of them take action as a community.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was in Ecuador last year and in 2019, we would go to women's marches and protests and such, and you would listen to feminist reggaeton and like lots of different music combinations from the sound, mm-hmm. but they all had these messages of equality and change and down with the patriarchy. So that is also a thing that influences the styles and the genres, and of course, very strongly the lyrics of when and where a specific type of music starts.
Yeah.
And those can also have parallels, like when it's time for rebellion, like in the 70s and 80s, for example, the rock got heavier, the punk got heavier, those styles started to cross over as well because of what the world was going through.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there we have an answer and at the same time, no answer at all.
Yeah, I again just think about we need another podcast where we we go and search for answers.
Yes, we could make this a series even.
Yes.
And talking about female fronted metal, I don't know if you saw the story I posted on the Bleeding Metal Podcast Instagram. I found this story in my feed. The Metal Burb, I think, is this person's name. They are a YouTuber, Twitch streamer, and influencer, metal influencer apparently. And they had an interview with Monique Pym from Relica, this awesome Australian band. I totally recommend listening to them. They asked the question of, is female fronted metal a thing? And I thought, yeah, well, 2016 called and wanted their topic back. We have already talked about that.
Yes, just go to our YouTube channel and watch our interviews. You have the answer right there.
Yes.
We did that for you.
You haven't done your homework. You haven't found our interviews. It was nice, though, to hear the perspective from a new generation of women in metal.
Mm-hmm.
And Monique was really cool and said that, of course, it's not a genre. I don't even think she even went there. It was just, it's a label that they might put on our band and it doesn't really affect us. And that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I thought it was funny, though. So yeah, funny things happen. Follow us on Instagram.
Okay, bye.
No, we can still thank our listeners for listening.
Did we talk about the topic enough for what you expected us to? Or did we just randomly talk about anything, everything? All at once.
Yes. Give us your thoughts. Give us your thoughts. Answer to our questions on Spotify. Follow us on Spotify, but also subscribe on Apple Podcasts and or wherever you listen. And tell your friends, bring them over. On our Instagram, we have the link tree. That's going to be in the show notes from now on as well.
Come to our Discord channel.
And we have Discord channel in my server, so you can also go in there and leave us a hi in the podcast channel.
And let us know if you want us to talk randomly about
something else.
Something else.
We can talk randomly about anything and everything.
Yeah, and think about our own theories without having done research at all.
Exactly. That's what we do best.
That's what you want. We can give it to you.
I think we have really cool things coming up for this year. This year is our 10th anniversary.
Wow.
2023 is our 10th anniversary. We started in October 2013 at Metal Female Voices Fest.
Mm-hmm.
And we have very cool things coming up, and we might have something planned, or we'll plan something for our anniversary. Stay tuned.
We should do that, yes.
All right. Bye, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.